Hey, everyone. I'm Amy Standen, Ear Hustle's editor.
And I'm Rahsaan New York Thomas, Ear Hustle producer. And do you believe, Amy, they left us alone to kick off the fundraiser?
We better not blow it, Rahsaan. The stakes are high.
We're going to blow it. We just have to find new jobs, I guess. This is the second Ear Hustle fundraiser I've been here for, and I never knew how much the show relies on listener support.
It really, really does. From now through the end of this season in June, our goal is to reach 1,000 donors.
So, Amy, for folks who donate, should we tell them where that money goes?
Sure. These donations help fund our ongoing work, but also things like getting us into prisons where we've never been before. Like if you enjoyed our episode about the hospice program at CMF, or the ones we've done with the women we've been meeting at the world's largest women's prison, CCWF. And there's also some really cool behind-the-scenes stuff, like developing an Ear Hustle curriculum for high school teachers.
Listener donations support all of that. Plus, this year, supporters will be invited to join us for a virtual party on June 13th, and they get a playlist of songs picked by the team.
And everyone who donates $10 a month or more will get access to Ear Hustle Plus, which is our new subscription service with ad-free episodes and bonus content.
Find out more and donate at earhustlesq.com.
Listener support means so much to us. Thank you. Should we give the mic back to Nigel Nerland now?
Not yet. We just got it.
This episode of Ear Hustle is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
My name is Mary Dahlke. My daughter Ellen is a really good friend of Nigel and Erlon's, and therefore they have become friends of mine also. The following episode of Ear Hustle contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
Okay, wait.
We gotta go with like an old, faithful, tried and true. We sung this 1,000 times in church, so we won't forget the words.
Okay.
Erlon, do you know what's one of the things I've learned about prison?
Not tell me.
Okay. So I've noticed that a lot of people really love to perform.
Amazing. Right.
So I always think it's kind of fun as an icebreaker to kind of stick a microphone in someone's face and ask them to sing. But maybe it's actually stressful. I don't know.
Okay, you lead, I'll follow.
Okay, we're going
to
do it.
Maybe to some people, but, you're going to get those that as soon as that mic come in front of their face, they get to perform.
They got to take the chance, right?
How sweet the sound that saves.
This is our first official visit to the Central California Women's Facility, or CCWF. Some people call it Chowchilla, which is the name of the town it's in.
CCWF has the only level 4 yard for women in California. And Erlon, did you know it's actually the largest women's prison in the world?
That's crazy. Yeah. In the world?
Yes.
And this one has a certain reputation.
Yeah, I don't know if it's deserved, but I've always heard that CCWF is a pretty tough place.
Well, I mean, level 4s are high security prisons. You know, if you're a woman and you commit a serious crime, this is where they're going to put you first.
Right. So for a lot of reasons, I was really curious to see this place. So we drove out early that morning and met our escort who took us through security.
Then we jumped into a golf cart and we drove through this big, wide, open area where they had some industrial buildings, which it was a real desolate area, you know? There was no one around.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, first of all, the guy driving the cart was going pretty fast. And I was like, we don't fall out of this thing. But the other thing was, I'd never seen a prison like that. You know what I thought about? You know when you're driving in the middle of nowhere and you see those big storage buildings and you don't know what the hell is inside
right,
of them?
Right.
That's what it was like. Just picture, like, we're sitting in this golf cart. I was almost grabbing onto your leg because I didn't want to fall out. So eventually we arrived at this big old kind of warehouse building.
We walked in, and that's where we met these five incarcerated women who had agreed to speak with us.
Could you each introduce yourselves?
Oh, my name is Unique.
My name's Good.
My name is Charity.
My name is Grace.
My name is Ponce. I'll go by my last name.
My name's Nigel, by the way. Nice to meet you all. And I don't know if any of you have heard Ear Hustle, the podcast that we do about life inside prison. So I kind of want to hear like the small, curious things. We like to tell stories that nobody else hears. You know, how do you see things? Maybe stuff you've never told anybody because you might have thought it was weird, but we're here to listen to all of it. And so we're super happy to be here. And yeah, we hope that we'll be coming back, you know, more often. But we really feel strongly about getting women's voices because, like, in everything in the world, women seem to get the second part of every meal, and we want to make it the first part of the meal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Women empowerment.
Exactly. Amen. Exactly.
Women to women. Yeah.
Let me take the metaphor of
we were kind of starting from scratch with these women, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't know about us and we didn't know about them. So basically, it was come sit down and tell us about yourself.
Pretty much. So today, we're going to meet five residents of the Central California Women's Facility, or CCWF. I'm Nigel Poor.
I'm Erlon Woods, and this is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
My name is Transita Ponce. I have been in custody for 23 years, 4 months, since the age of 18. I am 42 years old now.
And your sentence is?
24 years, 8 months.
Ponce has a very solid, commanding presence. And Erlon, when I first saw her, I've got to be honest, I was a little intimidated.
Really?
Yeah.
So damn, you had to do the...
The whole time, I was a problematic inmate when I first came in.
Could you tell us a story from that time when you were problematic?
When you were hood.
Oh, when I was hood, I have a lot of problematic stories from that time. You know, I was very angry if you didn't look like me or if you didn't talk like me. You know, I just had this standard in my brain that if you weren't a Southerner, you weren't looking like me, that we had no conversations.
Break down Southerner, because that might get by people. They might think of the South.
Southerner, meaning I used to be involved in gangs. Gangs represent Southside in Riverside County, LA County, San Diego County. So, you know, I was a Southerner. And at that time, when I first came to prison, I stood by that.
When you're involved in a gang in prison, you gotta follow a lot of rules, including who you can and can't share a cell with. And the big no-nos are sex offenders, people who hurt children, and in some cases, homosexuals.
The prison is going to assign you whoever they assign you. So if you end up with someone you have a problem with, according to gang rules, you gotta get out of that situation as quickly as possible.
I had a roommate. I found out she was a child case. She drowned her own son. And when I found out she did that, of course, me being me at that time, I got up, I assaulted her, I hit her, I took her off her bunk, I spit on her, and I threw her belongings outside of my room. No child cases was allowed to live with me. No child cases, nobody who told, nobody who was involved with the officers, nobody. You had to have something for me, drugs, alcohol, sexy woman. That's how I lived my life at that time. These are my rules. You're going to follow them. You can't wear your shoes in my room. You know, you have to be out the room by 9 o'clock, be out, be up in the morning, shower, make sure your bed's made. I don't want to hear the cops looking for you. Don't bring no officers here. And that's how I would agree to you. I was an addict. I became a heroin addict in here. If I needed to get my drugs, and if you have some canteen or something and I didn't have it, I was taking it. You know, that's what I did. For many years, I did that.
Would you have classified yourself as a bully?
Yes, I would have.
I really appreciate you talking about being a bully, because yeah. I swear, out of all the stories we've done, nobody ever talks about
wow.
somehow they were never the bully, even though they probably were. This is something I've always wanted to ask a bully. When you see somebody getting...
Asked a former bully.
Okay,
former
sorry. Bully. Yeah, to speak to this. When you, back then when you were a bully and you saw somebody being hurt and they were crying or asking for mercy or help, mm-hmm. and you would just watch, what was the feeling you had inside watching?
Power.
That?
Control. That's exactly what I felt. You know, even in my crime, I was the bully. You know, I led four other people into hurting an innocent girl. And she cried and she begged and I laughed and I felt so empowered. I felt so much of control. I felt like a leader. Just to have another human being like fearful of you, that was powerful to me. Yeah.
And there's nothing that person could have said?
Nothing.
To stop
Absolutely.
It.
There is nothing nobody could have said to me. I look back and all the people that I harmed and hurt, and I feel bad about it. I heard a story once a few years back. Somebody went to a SAP building here. It's where they do like victims impact, parenting. A girl came in there and was like, I just came back to prison and there's this girl here and I'm so scared of her. You know, she was my roommate and she stole my fan and she went and sold it. And I'm just so scared if I see her, what she'll do to me. And the person at the time was like, who are you talking about? And she's my AKA was Loca. And she said, Loca, that hurts me that I cause so much pain to people. You know, it hurts me a lot.
Did you remember her?
I did not remember her. There were so many things I did to people. I mean, I've fought people. I've cut almost a lady's ear off just to get her jewelry because she had a diamond earring and the connection or somebody wanted it, you know? That's what I did. For many years, I did that. A lot of years.
And how did it feel when you heard that story that the woman was afraid of you?
It made me sad. It made me think about it. It made me not want to have no more stories like that. No, even talking about it now, it's like, I don't like that person. It's the truth. It's who I was. And it's hurtful to hear that.
My name is Grace Coleman. I've been here 1 year as of a couple weeks ago, and I've been down for almost 3 years. I'm here on a DUI case. I got second-degree murder, 21 years to life.
And how old are you?
I'm 24. I was in school at Santa Barbara, and the pandemic hit, so then I moved home. And I was doing everything online. And all of a sudden, we had all this free time to just do, you know, still be living in our college towns with the drinking and the drugs and whatever, but having no really sense of responsibility. And for me, just completely kind of lost my way. So, yeah, life was normal until it wasn't.
Gotcha.
Is this your first time in prison?
This is my first time in prison, yes. When I first got here, people would see me and they would automatically assume, oh, like DUI case? And I'm like, yep.
They didn't hit you with like credit card fraud, EDD?
Well, they make bets, right? So I was working in the kitchen and I guess all of them started being like, okay, she's either one of those pretty bitches that killed her boyfriend or she's here on a DUI case. And they're making bets on it. And I come out one day and they're like, so what are you here for? There's a certain like stereotype around DUI cases that, you know, maybe we think that we shouldn't be here, that you just kind of have to break the barriers with. We're all here for something that we did, whether, you know, I took a knife and stabbed someone or I got behind the wheel of a vehicle while severely intoxicated. I went through a pretty gnarly experience when I first got here. I think it's kind of your typical what people get scared about.
Can you tell us
when...
about it?
Yeah. So I got here and when you first get here, and especially not coming to prison before, you don't really know what to expect, right? You don't know what rights you have.
When Grace walked into the room, she was carrying this little notebook, and turns out it was a journal.
Yep, and in it was a story that Grace wrote about the very first bunkie she had when she arrived at CCWF.
So we asked Grace to read the story to us. Actually, it's really a journal entry about something that happened to Grace when she was in reception, which is the first place you go to when you arrive here for the first time. And she was assigned to share a cell with another new arrival, who was, of course, a total stranger.
Her episode started in the happy heights of a good high, but soon led down the pathway of paranoia into the dumps of depression. In those moments, I was the enemy. She would grab me, punch the bunks, bombard me with schizophrenic uncertainty. Moaning and masturbating all afternoon long, she would go through the motions of her mental illness controlling her. The vicious cycle continued for hours on end. The happy heights would include moments of mysterious communications with the ghosts of my past. She would write letters to my great aunts, my grandmother, my great grandmother. I'd catch her laying happily in giggly conversation with one of the voices in her head. When I was curious enough to ask her who she was speaking to, she would smile and say, "Your mother." She convinced herself at some point, even me, that my ancestors were looking after me inside this cell and wanted me to know I was going to be okay. Talking to my ancestors was her way of making peace from the moaning miseries of the nights before. It was like waking up hungover, attempting to find your phone and bra in the aftermath of last night's madness. I reached up to God, asking him, "Why this test?" This whole prison situation has definitely been full of fear for me.
What are the things that you're most fearful of?
I mean, sometimes I get fearful of just the way that I talk. I definitely have that valley girl, whatever. So I think that I almost feel like, you know, better putting on a front or being someone else in order to protect myself from that vulnerability of having that. Because sometimes it's like, you know, I'll just start talking in a group and people are like, oh, like, you know, so I've definitely put on different masks and different fronts of trying to be someone I'm not in jail and in here, and just kind of keeping to myself and things like that in order to prevent myself from being bullied or from being vulnerable, and just kind of a way of protecting myself.
You said prison you thought would be terrifying, you couldn't do it. Is it terrifying?
It's not. It's not, because I, you know, I'm around so many amazing women who, you know, my dad was reminding me of this, like, right now prison is my career. Right now prison is my life, and just like no matter where you are in life, it's what you make it.
Do you think part of thinking about it being terrifying was physical fear, or the fear of all of a sudden your life being not at all what you expected, and looking at time stretching out ahead of you and trying to figure out how do I make my life now?
Definitely a little bit of both. It was the physical fear. I mean, I think when, you know, people picture prison, they picture fights and drugs and people getting stabbed and all of these scary things. I mean, coming here on a life sentence, that entails the possibility of this being the rest of my life. So any dreams or goals or anything that you kind of had for yourself established out there, you know, you feel like are taken away from you. You definitely grieve the life that you thought you were meant to have.
My name is Charity Williams, and I have been incarcerated since 2014, but I've been in Chowchilla since 2017.
Erlen, what was your reaction to Charity when you first saw her?
I would say maybe a midwife.
Okay, I get why you're saying that, because there was something about her that there was like a lot of inner light or something. She seemed like someone who was kind of into taking care of other people.
Right.
I mean, she seemed, I don't know, like physically strong and very capable. So what is your personality as a bunkie?
In the room, I'm actually much more soft-spoken than I am in public, because when I go to my house or my housing unit, because people get offended when you call it home or house, but I don't, that's my quiet time. That's my quiet space. And for the majority of the people that you talk to that have been here for a while or they have lengthy sentences, that's what we describe as like, that's our quiet place. So when I go in there, like, I just get my head right and I can just be cool and I can be calm and I don't have to talk. And I just do my college homework or I watch church on TV or whatever. But that's my quiet time. That's my peace.
Can you talk a little bit about people getting offended when you call it home?
You know, some people, they view home as their family. And so when you refer to this place as, oh, this is my home, or I'm going back to the house, or I'm going back home after work, they look at it as it like it triggers them, because they're like, that's not where my family is. That's not my home. And I understand that. But as someone who was professionally homeless before I came to Chowchilla, I understand that home for me is where my heart is.
Professionally homeless.
I hopped freight trains for almost a decade before I came to Chowchilla. I've been back and forth across the United States more times than I can even count.
And do you think living that way prepared you in some way to be in prison? Like, were there helpful things that you learned that you could adapt to life in prison, or was it more detrimental?
Well, I learned how to budget money really well. I learned how to survive with just myself and my dog on $20 a week, you know? And so living here, living off of canteen, well, now it's a little bit more expensive, but you learn how to budget and you do learn how to live small. My backpack was generally 25 to 30 pounds, but that's just because my life was in there. And if you're hopping freight trains, you now have to run with all of those things or throw it or catch it or whatever, you know, it's just, it's not worth it.
How do the lifestyle change from being a hobo to being a prisoner?
The biggest change was the walls. I mean, I can say this has kept me sane, is that right outside of Chowchilla, well, outside the CCWF, we have the freight lines that run by, so I still hear the trains. I can hear a train engine coming from a mile away. So even when it's silent and the horn's not going off, I can still hear the engines because it's really close. I can hear the horns, and we have the beautiful scenery out on the main yard with the mountains. And when it snows, it's just breathtaking. And then when it rains too, like, the smell of the wet earth and especially the smell of rust will just take me right back to it. So that kind of keeps me from just being locked into this space. Having all of those memories and those stories that even when I get depressed, even when I'm feeling like stuck and I'm getting claustrophobic, I can just kind of go back in my mind and think about those times when I was out and I was free. So even though my body may be incarcerated, my mind and my spirit really aren't.
So if you really do seem to have grasped this idea that home is where you are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll sit there in the morning and I'll watch the sun come up, and it's really just seeing anything other than someone in blue, seeing anything other than someone in green, seeing anything other than these buildings. So I'll sit and I'll face away from the prison and I'll just watch the sun come up over the road and with the geese and the little grass, you know, eating or whatever. And it's nice and it brings me comfort. My biggest habit that I had when I first got locked up is when I would lay down to go to sleep at night, I would rock myself back and forth. And it, to me, it would mimic the feeling of being on a train and it would help me fall asleep.
So like this?
I still do it.
Just like that?
It's just kind of like it's more jerky. It's not comforting and swaying at all. It's like just a jerky motion. Yeah.
And you still do that?
Yes. I still do it. And it mimics the same feeling that I got when I would lay down on a train.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear more about what life is like at CCWF.
And the number one thing everybody talks about in here.
At every prison, Nige.
That's right. Hygiene.
A I thought you was going to say ear hustle.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
I hear these cells. I hear these cells a calling. They hollering, "We really want your bodies." I'm waiting on Ken Burns to come and dock this. My work ethic is so impressive. From the shoe to wear boots, don't bet against me. I'm a beast. I'm unleashed.
Y'all can good as a rapper, and she's pretty good.
Yeah, and you get a sense of her energy from listening to her. You know, like she's very wound up, and you feel like she's just this spring that's going to go.
My name is Carmela Molse. I've been incarcerated in the California justice system since 18. I started off at this prison, got kicked out, went to VSP. When VSP shut down, I went to CIW, got kicked out, and came back here.
So how long you been locked up?
20 years.
Why is your name good and you getting kicked out of all these prisons?
Because I aspire to be good. I aspire. I have my defects, of course, as does everybody else, but I aspire to be good.
I was interested in the fact that Good has spent time both at CCWF and the other place that you and I go to on a regular, which is CIW near LA.
Yeah, I mean, they're such different places.
Night and day.
I mean, CIW is smaller. There's grass and trees around. It's closer to the, you know, the town where it's situated. And I think it's fair to say that it's more integrated into society.
True. I can agree with that.
So a lot of the people that we met at CIW had been here, and they talked about how grateful they were to be at CIW versus here. If you could, would you go back to CIW?
I think at the time I was there, it's so close to the city and it feels so free that I wasn't ready in my rehabilitation to accept the street being so close to me. On the main yard, you can look out and the city's right there. You see the street lights, you see the cars going by, and here you don't see none of that. It's the almond field. We don't see out. It surprised me that how much it disturbed me to be so close to somebody's community, and I wasn't ready to be.
Like, what sorts of feelings did it bring up?
Just how safe am I, really? What kind of problems would I experience in the community that could lead me back to prison?
Interesting. I thought you were going to say it made you long to be out there.
It made me concerned.
Do you still feel that way?
Yes.
So does it feel emotionally better to be in a place where you can't see the community?
To avoid life? Yes. To accept life? No. I need more life experience. That's going to give me the ultimate answers to my question, am I safe enough to return back into society?
Are you safe enough, far as have you changed your life, or has society itself changed? If you're asking for society, hell no.
Good question, because that's what I'm hearing all the time. Like, people are super disrespectful out there, you know, and I have a problem with my space, and I say please and thank you and excuse me, and, you know, it doesn't get me anywhere, you know?
It was really interesting to hear Good's voice change here. You know, like, her whole body got really tense and she started talking so fast. It's hard to follow her.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's talking about getting triggered, and that's what we're hearing in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of people in prison have that concern that, like, when they get out, are they going to face the same type of challenges, you know, that got them in prison in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Because people change. But a lot of that shit is still in them.
Right, right. And I think it's actually a really honest and brave thing to talk about.
Definitely.
I don't want to be the person who's psyched out fighting in the thrifty line because I want a triple scoop of whatever they have out there now, and somebody cuts me and is like, well, fuck you. I don't give a fuck about how you feel or like what you got going on. Like, how am I going to handle that situation? I'm very violent. I can be very violent.
Hmm. Still?
I think now I'm interested in defending myself. So what I'm learning is when I do have a threat and I do feel like I need to protect myself, to not engage. You know, because from my trauma, I'm already the first one to hit because I want to get it done as fast as possible. So I'm working on, instead of engaging, retreating, stepping back. You know, making sure that I could just defend myself to where I feel safe, that I'm not going to get fucked up too bad, and remove myself when the appropriate time manifests itself.
My work ethic is so impressive, from the shoe to wear boots. Don't bet against me. I'm a beast. I'm unleashed. Y'all can chain me, spend my vacays in EOP. No shame can stand to take me because these things slide right off me. I achieve. I succeed. Oh, I believe
in you too. Let's go.
May I draw your attention to the structural menacing question? Because inspection's in session. You know, shading is some depth. I bid you sense my perspective. I'm signing.
What?
Cool, right?
Man. She did her shit.
She did. So Good recently won a contest, and the hip-hop artist Lecrae Erlon, who actually does a lot to support prisons, he's been into San Quentin and stuff, and he came in and produced that song with her, and it's been stuck in my ears all week. Yes?
Nigel, I took you for a Tupac fan.
All us different ethnic groups crowd into unopened public schools that can't teach us why. Oh, why? We go through what we go through.
Y'all know what this is, man. It's crazy right here.
My work.
My name is Unique Bishop. I've been locked up for 16 years. I mean, I've been through the storm in here. Like, where everybody goes down for one fight and the police don't know who did it, so we all going to jail. I didn't been to the hole for things that didn't even have anything to do with me.
Unique is the one who was given the Beyonce treatment to Amazing Grace at the top of the episode.
Yes, she was. And I think that kind of says everything you need to know about her, right? She's lively, bouncy, but at the same time, she's been in prison for quite a while and she's seen it all.
I didn't have a roommate that got butt naked before, like basically banging on the door just so she can go to EOP, which is the crazy place, because she wanted to be with her girlfriend. Then I'm like, wait, what's going on? Like, you can't do that. You about to get all of us in trouble, yeah. You know? They don't care. A lot of these women are just broken. Like, yeah. they feel like this is what the judge said, so yeah. This is where I'm going to be and this is what I'm going to do. I don't care.
One of the things that sets CCWF apart from other prisons we've been to is the way people are housed.
Yes. So at San Quentin and CIW, that women's prison near L.A., most people are housed in a two-person cell. So there's one bunk bed, one sink, one toilet.
Yeah, but here at CCWF, people live in eight-man rooms or eight-person cells. So each room has four bunk beds and a shared bathroom and shower.
Would you say that the four other women that you live with, do you consider them friends or acquaintances, or are they people you would go to with a problem, or do you kind of keep your distance?
I don't keep my distance because I'm actually a people's person. I laugh a lot, I play a lot, and I don't hold grudges for too long. I have been in a room with them for some time now, and we have a good relationship.
We said earlier that hygiene is a big deal at CCWF.
Really? It seems like it is at every prison.
Yep. So it's no surprise that pretty much everyone had a story about something that had happened in one of the showers that they all share.
I lived with a lady who didn't like to take showers, didn't like to shave, brush her teeth, and I kept telling myself, like, I'm not trying to be controlling, but something has to give because days have passed and this cannot be happening. Like, it got the whole room smelling. I'm like, when was the last time you took a shower? And she was like, I took one 2 days ago. And I said, no, you didn't take one 2 days ago. And she was like, well, I'm going back to sleep. I looked at her, and then I looked at my other roommates. I was like, something got to give. You know, I don't know what it is, but something has to give. I was going back into my old negative thoughts, you know, because I was like, do I got to throw a bucket of water with bleach in it on her or what? But then I'm like, I could think of a different way to do it. So when she woke up or whatever, I talked to her. I said, is it possible you need help to shower? Because she's a big lady. I said, I'll help you. And my roommates was like, you will help her? I'm like, we either going to help her or we y'all want to smell this. So she said, you can help me, but you ain't going to like what you see. So I was like, wait, what? She was like, I'm a shower. I'm going to do it myself because I don't want nobody to see what I got, right? So I'm like, all right. The lady was like, okay, but I still need a little bit of your assistance, right? So I washed her back off and, you know, whatever. And she said, this is what I didn't want to show you. And she turned around and literally her stomach was past her her knees. She had a tumor. And I was telling her, you're still supposed to shower, whether you have that or not, like, you know? And she was just like, I'm trying, but as of right now, I'm just going to lay in my bed. And if you want to continue to wash me, then you can continue to wash me. But this is what I'm going to do. So that's one. You know.
So she couldn't lift up her...
No, she couldn't lift it up, and I did it, though. I helped her that day.
Earlonne, I was really moved by Unique in the way she offered to sort of be a caretaker to this woman.
Right.
I think a lot of people wouldn't do it.
Nah.
So, you know, to me, there's a tenderness to it.
Yeah, I think with another group of women or another group of bunkies,
mm-hmm. They
would have just gotten rid of her. You know, they'd have moved her somewhere because hygiene is very serious in prison. Like,
yes.
If you want somebody to snap on you, be smelly.
Yep. And whenever something is contentious, that usually means that there are a ton of unwritten rules that you just have to know.
Yeah. That woman, Grace, we talked to earlier, she's the one who came in on a DUI and has only been down a short time. She had to learn all these rules fast.
Sometimes it feels like if there's a hair on the floor, it's like the end of the world kind of thing.
And you've got long hair, so...
Yeah. I have naturally frizzy, curly hair, so it's not always the easiest to tame. Some of the rules are having to wake up at a certain time. Everyone in the room gets up anywhere between like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. even if you know, say you're new here and you have a schedule that doesn't start till later in the day, you have people that have that expectation on you that you still have to get up and shower and have all of, you know, at least get up and take a shower before 7 a.m.
What's the reasoning behind that?
I almost couldn't tell you, but I mean, it's really easy for people to see you as dirty. Being a white girl in prison, there's all of these stereotypes that are kind of thrown on you almost immediately of being like that, like dirty white girl. And
what
which
do you
was,
mean?
I think it's just like a term like that people just kind of throw around. It's basically just like if you don't shower, wake up and shower at like a certain time, then you're like looked at like as, you know, dirty or
so literally that you're like a lazy, dirty white girl.
Yeah. Every time you go outside, depending on what room you're in, but every time you go outside, you're expected to shower right when you come back in from the outside because of the worry of bugs or germs or anything like that. When you think about life at home, it's like you know, maybe you go out to walk the dog or you come back and you're not always jumping in the shower right away. Like it's the end of the world if you're not.
Yeah.
So those are expectations that are definitely set on us very early on.
And where do you think that comes from? This real focus on hygiene and cleanliness.
I think definitely in prison, we feel like we don't have control over many, many things. So having the control at least over, you know, the space in the room, what people do, I think it has something to do with, you know, wanting to kind of have that control over something when so much else feels out of our control. I think it just has to do with being in such a confined space that you try to have these rules to balance that out as much as you can.
We had this person named Shane who lived in our room.
This is Charity, the former train hopper. She had a shower story for us too.
Earline, everyone's got one. We gotta write a book about these.
I don't know. Can I write a book about women's showers? No, I'm
just messing with you. Can.
And Shane was a dope fiend. And did not last very long anywhere because they were very disorganized, is the nice way to put it. He was a mess. He's a trans man. There was one time Shane took a shower and the next person went to go in behind him and there was shit in the shower. They were like, what the fuck is this shit in the shower? We go through the whole room like, did you shit in the shower? Did you shit in the shower? We know who shit in the shower. Like, we know it's Shane, right? And so he's like, no, I wouldn't do that. What the fuck? And we're like, well, Shane, you're the last person in the shower, first and foremost. And second of all, none of us would do that. My roommate, Lily, she's like, Shane, I'm serious. Get the fuck off your bed right now and go clean the shower or I'm going to beat your ass. And he's like, fine, fucking bitches. I hate it. He's like cussing us out, having a whole mental breakdown. But he gets down off his bunk and he cleans the shower. He comes back out. And coming from someone who is professionally homeless, like, I have really decent standards of cleanliness. And so I'm watching Shane. He finishes cleaning, comes out the shower, takes his shower shoes, puts them up, gets right back on his bed. He's wearing the exact same outfit and the exact same socks. Like, he didn't even take his socks off to clean the shitty shower before he got back on his bed. And I'm just sitting here and I'm just, all I can see is the socks. Like, I have blinders on. It's all I can see is these shit socks on the bed. And I very calmly just say, Shane, did you wear those socks in the shower when you cleaned the shower? He's like, yeah, what the fuck is the problem? I'm just like, Shane, if you don't take those fucking socks off your feet right now, off your bed, I'm gonna beat you. He sits up, he's all huffy, he takes the socks off, he throws them on the floor. And so now the socks are in the middle of the one area, which is technically the middle of the kitchen. And my friend Lily is looking at him and he's like, Shane, did you just take those shitty socks off of your feet and throw them on the floor? Like, you couldn't even pick them up and put in the laundry basket. The next unlock, my roommate, she goes to the cop shop, and there was this officer working. His name's Ramirez. He's no longer with us, but he was a special kind of individual and not the cool kind. And she goes up to him, and she's like, I need a bed move. He's like, what? She's like, he shit in my shower. I need a bed move. He's like, what's his name? Seriously, he was out the room that night because it was like, at that point, I was like, literally, I'm going to beat you if you don't, the socks.
Nige, I know this is a funny story, but it does point out the fact that in prison life, there is a code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I guess, got to know their place.
Right, right. And what's expected of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I know that could sound really oppressive, and I'm sure it is. But over time, it seems like for some people, that code of conduct actually becomes reassuring.
Yeah, I think that's a real danger of prison. It's a tightly controlled environment, and if you're in it too long, for some people, it gets hard to leave.
I've been incarcerated so long, the fear of getting out. I don't know that world, so I'm so fearful what that looks like. You know what? I feel safe in here.
This is Ponce, the former bully that we heard at the top of the show. And out of all these women that we met, she's the one who's actually getting out, like, really soon.
So you're saying you're actually nervous about getting out, that you feel safer in here. Do you still feel that way? Do you still feel safer in here?
I am really trying to grasp my mind out about parole now. I'm excited. Well, I am very fearful, if I could be honest, you know? It's like the same thing I could describe in mean being a little 18-year-old scary girl coming to prison. I didn't know this world, but now it's the same thing. I'm going to get out a 43-year-old woman, and it's a world I don't know.
You just said this was your home for 25 years, and we were talking to some other women about how people get offended sometimes if you call prison home. Mm. How do you think about that?
Well, you know what? For some people here, we do make it our home. You know, we have a canteen. I would call it my store. We have a room. I'd call it my home. You go to the library. You go to the park, the yard. You know, you just get inventive with it. You know, and if you have a sentence, it's going to be your home for a long time. And then you get comfortable. Like the room I was in, I made it beautiful. I don't get offended. It was my home for a lot of years.
Erlan, I gotta say, going to CCWF was an amazing experience.
Yes, it was. Meeting a lot of new individuals, adding a lot of voices to the show.
I know.
Just giving them the platform to do them.
Well, it's just so cool. Like, you show up at a place, you don't know anyone, they don't know you, you have no idea what to expect. And, like, we were really able to connect in a meaningful way. And
we had a motley crew.
We had a motley crew all around. But they were so poetic and insightful. And I think, in some ways, some of the most honest stories we've heard about prison life.
We definitely met a few different people with very different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. We got to get back there soon.
Indeed, we do. Ear Hustle is produced by me, Erlon Woods, Nigel Poor, Amy Standin, Bruce Wallace, and Rasan Ran the Marathon Thomas.
Shubnam Sigman is our managing producer.
The producing team inside San Quentin includes Steve Brooks, Darrell Sadiq Davis, Tony DeTrinidad, and Tom Nguyen. The inside managing producer is Tony Tafoya.
Erlon Woods sound designs and engineers the show with help from Fernando Arruda, Rashid Zinneman, and Darrell Sadiq Davis. Y'all can check me.
Thanks to Acting Warden Smith and Lieutenant Barry at San Quentin, and Warden Dela Cruz at CCWF.
And also big thanks to this woman here.
Hello, my name is Lieutenant Monique Williams from the Central California Women's Facility. I am the Public Information Officer, the Administrative Assistant to Warden Anissa Dela Cruz, and I approve this episode. I'm verbalizing scheme, my emails, and narrate weapon, I stereotypes. Terror hypnotized by the pain and lies transmitted in the generations filtered through assimilation in the projects and ghettos. We learn to be Americans. All us different ethnic groups crowd into unfunded public.
This episode was made possible by the Jess Trust, working to amplify the voices, vision, and power of communities that are transforming the justice system.
For more information about this episode, check out our show notes on Ear Hustle's website, earhustlesq.com.
You can also find out more about the show on all the socials at Ear Hustle SQ.
And do you want more Ear Hustle? Subscribe to Ear Hustle Plus.
We've got bonus episodes and live chats where we get to chat it up with the listeners about the show.
Erlon, I've always wanted to do that. I'm super excited about this.
I did it recently. It was fun.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Sign up at earhustlesq.com/plus.
And please don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, The Lowdown, where you can see photos and other extra content about the episode.
Subscribe to that at earhustlesq.com/newsletter. And while you're at it, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, please. This is a big help for the show, and we really appreciate your words.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, creator-owned, listener-supported podcasts.
Discover audio with vision at radiotopia.fm.
I'm Nigel Poor.
I'm Erlon Woods.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, Nige.
Yes?
Did you like that song?
You know, I loved it. And I'm so thankful that Lecrae gave us permission to use the version he produced with Good.
Good looking out, Lecrae.
Thank you so much. And I know it's late, but can we thank you for that time you came into San Quentin all those years ago? So wonderful to meet you in person. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks again, Lecrae. We definitely appreciate you.
Thank you.
It's crazy. We threw out a Hail Mary. We reached out to him on social. And he responded.
What a good man.
Whew. Episode number 6.
Number 6. That's not very impressive.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through.
BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy.
Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com.
That's BetterHelp.com.
It's Erlon.
And Nigel.
Here again, reminding you to donate to our spring fundraiser today so we can keep bringing you more Ear Hustle.
Everyone who donates will be invited to our virtual party on June 13th. If you've never been, it's a fun time where we talk about the season and answer some of your questions live. Uncensored, live.
And I will be on a hologram so y'all can see me.
3DE.
On Zoom. Every donation, any amount, will help us reach our goal. So please go to earhustlesq.com to learn more and please contribute.
Thank you.
If you can find it in your heart, in your pocket, in your wallet, in the couch.
Radiotopia. From PR.